Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. Now, this is Shane Vanderhart and got Ron Carlson at the controls. And,
yes, indeed.
And Brian decided he wanted to go visit his grandchildren out in Rhode Island. I don't understand.
They're more important than we are, you
say. I don't get it. Yeah. Priorities. He needed to be here.
Yeah.
I think he'd appreciate what I wanted to talk about, you know, just kind of introducing the show.
Yeah.
Introducing the show. I razz him a lot about, you know, being older than me.
Mm-hmm.
But three things have happened in this last week that made me think that, you know, I really am getting older.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. For those of you who aren't aware, I turned 44 this year. And first thing is, last week, I'm going through the Wendy's drive-thru, and this lady asked me if I wanted a senior's discount for people who are 59 and up. And I have to admit to you, I took it. So it's like, sweet. No, I'm not ready to get offered that on a regular basis. At least I'm not getting inundated by AARP stuff yet.
There you go. Those are just nasty.
Second thing, I went to see the eye doctor this morning.
Oh, no.
I can get bifocals, but I could actually put it off for a year. So I'm trying to debate whether I just bite the bullet and just do it now, or wait until, you know, reach that landmark at on my 45th birthday. So I got to decide that.
Yeah, but you can always get progressives, and then no one knows you've got them.
Now, and when I was watching videos last night preparing for the show, hard work if you can get, I know. I slave for you people doing show prep, okay?
He certainly does.
I do. YouTube has these commercials that come on. And there's this commercial that came on called for Squatty Potty.
Squatty Potty?
Squatty Potty. Because, you know, we just don't poop well enough. and you know how I know I'm getting older?
Yes.
I was actually tempted to buy it.
Yeah?
So it's like, that sounds fabulous. Anyway, now he's probably wondering, why did I call in? I just wanted to introduce our guest today because he is a... He's been around the block a few times when it comes to politics and presidential politics. Wes Enos is a former member of the Iowa GOP State Central Committee, and he's worked for a couple different presidential campaigns, right, Wes?
A few.
Okay.
Over the years.
Okay. I just wanted to. It's like Squatty Potty. Yeah, you know, we're not going to talk about Squatty Potty.
A little different than politics. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Both kind of crappy subjects, but you know,
Squatty Potties and senior discounts. Different type things.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I wanted to talk to you because it seems like more and more people are, you know, like Reince Priebus acknowledge that, hey, we might have a contested primary. You know, several other people are saying, you know, the 538s, you know, saying this is a very real possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Let's walk through what is the difference between, say, a contested convention, not primary. I think I said primary. Contested convention.
We understood.
And a brokered convention.
So, realistically, the difference between a contested convention and a brokered convention is whether or not your candidate is winning.
Okay.
There really is no material difference between the two of them. People would say a contested convention is one where nobody has 51% or that the 50% simple majority necessary to nominate a presidential candidate. And a brokered convention is where nobody has that and somebody and people behind the scenes are trying to push somebody specifically to get to that particular point. So,
okay.
But realistically, they are the same thing. Just what you call it depends on what your perception of what is happening around you really
yeah,
is. But,
yeah, broker just sounds so much dirtier, you know?
Like, it does.
They're changing the rules and... Yeah, but reality, if a candidate was smart, they should be willing these delegates, you know, and the leadership for this possibility, because there are going to be some unbound delegates and 100 or so that are going into a convention. Some states like North Dakota, for instance, have their delegates are not, you know, it's not binding. There's some states that actually, with candidates withdraw, those candidates are kind of up for, or those delegates are up for grabs as well, right?
In some states, depends on their rules. Yeah, some yes, some no.
In Iowa, that's not the case, but in some states, I think that is the case. Let's see. I was looking at in Iowa, North Carolina, and Virginia, they remain. Bound
technically on that first round,
right on the first ballot, yeah. But this document from 538 I'm looking at has a delegate count. It's a pretty cool worksheet. It says delegates become free agents in New Hampshire, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Texas, Hawaii, Puerto Rico, Louisiana, Wyoming, Georgia, D.C. For instance, like Louisiana, you know, I saw a story that Ted Cruz gains in Louisiana after a loss there to Donald Trump. He actually may end up getting more Louisiana delegates than Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's distinctly possible with the number of people who've dropped out. And the shift of those people toward Ted Cruz, I think, is a very distinct possibility. You're seeing things we've never seen happen with Ted Cruz before. If someone would have said at, you know, February of this year, of last year, that Mitt Romney would be endorsing Ted Cruz, people would have thought you were insane.
Yeah.
If you would have come out and said Jeb Bush will be endorsing Ted Cruz for president, you would have been institutionalized because that was completely unthinkable back then.
Right. Well, I love it how some people are saying, "Oh, Cruz establishment. See, Romney's behind him. What's his name?" The guy, the weird guy out of South Carolina. Lindsey Graham.
Lindsey Graham.
Yeah. The weird guy. He looks weird. He's got a funny voice. which probably explains how his presidential campaign went. Anyway, when he endorsed Cruz, you know, it's like, I'm saying pigs fly, you know, because he made a joke about how if Cruz was murdered in the Senate, on the Senate floor.
Yeah, the trial were held in the Senate.
And you
would be able to convict that person.
Right.
Absolutely.
So you got these people who are coalescing around Cruz. Does that mean Cruz is an establishment?
I think what that means more than anything is that Donald Trump is just damaged as far as being a candidate goes in general. And by damaged, what I mean is he does so poorly with so many demographics that he's actually made people who you would consider to be more establishment-type politicians concerned with the fact that he's going to have a negative impact down ballot. The presidency is less of a concern to them than how this race is going to affect us down ballot.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, we had Todd Akin, who was running for U.S. Senate down in Missouri,
right.
And he went out and said some things about rape, and they were bad. They were things that, and it wasn't even like his central core premise was really ideologically off, but the way that he said it was such a way where it really kind of it had ripple effects all across the country. I mean, we lost a Senate seat that basically they backed him into a similar corner and then tried to tie him to Todd Akin and things. Todd Akin
in
said.
Indiana, right?
Yep, in Indiana. Yeah. It hurt us down ballot in a bunch of different places. Imagine if you gave Todd Akin the presidential nomination and made it worse than what Todd Akin did.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the thing that we're seeing with Donald Trump, is that he goes out and he just says whatever, and you know, he and up to this point there have been no consequences for him. But if you were to consider this election like a car, I think Donald Trump has a very distinct possibility of crossing the finish line and winning this primary, in which case he will be the Republican nominee.
Right. Now, I wanted to follow up on something you just said. There's been no consequences for Trump. Why do you think that is?
I think what happened early on, usually once people become emotionally invested in a candidate, it's extremely difficult to get them to move. Mm-hmm. And what happened with Trump, I think, happened in a vacuum. No one took Donald Trump seriously for a very, very, very long time. he had the, he was very good at getting control of media cycles. He was extremely good at going out and doing things that were controversial and saying things that were controversial. And no one ever really said anything. They all just assumed, well, he's kind of this crazy uncle over here, and we'll let the crazy uncle kind of do the crazy uncle thing.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing ever happened. Nothing ever came of that. So in this vacuum of no one ever challenging him, he was able to sort of build up this following of people who are now emotionally involved with Donald Trump. And the idea that anything you try and say to them, they see as just an attack that, you know, it's an attack and it's fake and it's a lie. Even when Donald Trump himself comes out and goes, oh, yeah, no, I can change my positions on anything. It's just
yeah.
I want to. And they don't even want to listen to that anymore.
Right.
So, you know, even when Donald Trump says that, oh, it's just a lie that the media is perpetuating on Donald Trump, had all this stuff started happening back in, say, July of last year, it might be a different story. People, you know, who are now emotionally invested in Donald Trump might not have become emotionally invested. But now that they are, when he says that he could go out and shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue in New York and not, you know, suffer any political consequences for it, at least in the primary sense, he's mm-hmm. probably absolutely right, and that's a concerning fact.
It, definitely concerning. Hey, you're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and on the line we have Wes Enos talking about the GOP race and the Trump phenomenon. Do you think the Never Trump movement has enough momentum to... I obviously, mathematically, I don't think it's possible for Ted Cruz to get enough delegates before the convention. But you think there's enough momentum out there to block Trump from getting the 1237?
You know, I'm not entirely sure. I'm hoping that that will be the case. We'll have to see. I mean, and if it is the case, you know, we'll have to see how the delegates broke out in all these other states. I mean, Iowa's a state where technically we're bound on the first ballot, and beyond the first ballot, then we will be able to be free agents like everyone else would be. I think Ted Cruz is a very strong organization at the state level. I think there are some other people, you know, around who are interested in running for those delegate spots, and we'll see how those all shake out coming out of Iowa. But if Donald Trump does cross that 50% margin, it won't really matter
right.
whether or not the Iowa delegation is friendly toward Cruz or someone else, because he will have won the nomination at
right.
that point. So 1237,
he'll win on the first ballot.
Yeah, if he wins on the first ballot, you can try to change the rules and say, but you don't want to do that. If
no.
he wins, you have to let him win and play the hand of cards at your belt. That's just, that's the way it is, especially on those down ballot races. I think everybody knows that. I think there's some people who think, oh, we can change it. Let's try and get it to a 60% margin.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure those conversations are having. I would probably not advise those conversations to continue.
Right.
If he gets to that number, let him have it. He has to be able to have it.
Right, and that will just confirm for some people, like, oh, this, you know, the establishment's trying to change the result. They're trying to go against the will of the people. And frankly, I know I don't like Trump. I don't want to see him win the nomination. I would be against, you know, doing that. You can't change the rules like that in the middle of the game.
You can't. I wouldn't even consider that rule changing. I'd consider that more cheating. And
yeah.
You can't. There's too many people who voted for him at this point. Even if you follow the rules that we have in place now, there are going to be people who will see it as cheating. You know, but even had he lost the number of, even had somebody else got 1237 before him, they probably would have also saw that as cheating. So you kind of have to take that for what it is, but people definitely will see it as cheating if you try and change the thresholds and force a convention. To answer your previous question, I'm not sure at this point. I mean, had Arizona gone for Ted Cruz and Ted Cruz picked up that 54 delegates, I'd say we're absolutely going to a convention. Now, you know, Trump is at a point where he needs to get 52%?
55, I saw, yeah. Something around that. Yeah, 55 is what I saw.
And that becomes hard when you consider that, you know, you still have New York and New Jersey still mm-hmm. to play. I got to assume that he's probably going to take at least 70% of those delegates. And
right.
frankly, that's like 200 delegates.
Yeah.
Right there for Donald Trump. So that's a big number, and he'll probably get a big number of those because they're awarded proportionally, but they're awarded proportionally on basis of congressional districts that you won.
Right.
So like Illinois, where technically they're supposed to be divided by congressional district, what did Ted Cruz get there? He got like 10
something
of like 60
that.
Delegates. I mean, it was it was a ridiculously low number, and you got that same thing playing out in these states where you're talking about 200 total delegates up for grabs. So it could be tough as far as that goes. Wisconsin, I think, will tell a different tale. I think if Donald Trump has stopped, he'll probably be stopped one, maybe 200 delegates short of the number that he needs.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's either going to go, it'll be determined June 7th or convention.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I mean, well, it could be determined, you know, the first week in April. If Ted Cruz doesn't probably win Wisconsin, you know, there's too many more delegates going Trump's direction now. I think you probably have him at a point where he needs, if we get to a point where Trump needs no more than 50% of delegates going forward at any one point, we can probably call it at that point that he's going to be the nominee.
That's true. So yeah, we'll see how the bat, if there's full of, you know, Wisconsin has sane people, you know, a majority of sane people in their state.
And it even goes beyond sane people. At this point, there are some people who, you know, aren't necessarily Trump people who are simply saying, you know, he's come this far. Can we at this point deny him the nomination without the idea of this sort of civil war happening within the party? You know, so there's that concern as well. And I've heard some people say things like, well, if you let Donald Trump have the nomination and he goes down in defeat and we all suffer down ballot, and, you know, I mean, because keep in mind what suffering down ballot means realistically is the loss of not only the loss of the White House, but potentially the loss of the Senate. And with the loss of the Senate and the White House, that means a complete loss of the Supreme Court as well.
Absolutely.
Now there is no prevention from Hillary Clinton taking somebody from the 9th District Court of Appeals.
All right. This is Caffeinated Thoughts. We'll be back in a moment. Thanks, Wes.
Yep.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
Welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find the life insurance you need. So, continuing on, just looking at the 2016 race, we just had Wesley Enos on, and Trump and Cruz, things are just getting really nasty. And I'm assuming, unless you're... don't ever watch the news, don't ever read anything, and live in a cave.
Ooh.
Okay, maybe that's a little harsh. Somewhere, you know, wherever, where you're just kind of isolated from current events, that you've seen what's been going on between Cruz and Trump regarding Cruz's wife, Heidi. There was initially a tweet. Oh, okay, let me back up to give you kind of the story. There was a Facebook ad that was basically put out there by the Make America Awesome Super PAC, which it was headed by Liz Marr. She's a Republican digital consultant. She worked briefly for Scott Walker's campaign until she tweeted out some nasty stuff about Iowa and... resigned in shame because Scott Walker says, yeah, we kind of like to win in Iowa, and offending us probably isn't the best thing to do. So anyway, this ad featured racy, well, a nude photo, didn't actually show anything, but it was a GQ. It was from a GQ shoot that Melania Trump did back in 2000 on Donald Trump's private airplane, which is really cool. I've had a chance to walk through and see it if it's the same airplane. Anyway, you know, so that was put out, and Trump basically tweeted out then after losing the Utah caucus, because this ad was released in advance to the Utah caucus, and Liz Mayer said we were targeting Mormon women with this ad, because you can, if you've ever done a Facebook ad, which I'm assuming most of our listeners probably have not done, you can actually target who sees your ad by interest, by geographical location. I mean, you could really, really age group. You can drill down on these things. Had it not made the news, probably any, you know, people outside of that demographic would have never known about it, even though this picture's been floating out there and I've seen different internet memes already. But anyway, Trump accuses Cruz of masterminding this and says, well, I'm just going to have to spill the beans on Heidi Cruz. So
Donald wouldn't do a thing like that now, would
no,
he?
No, no. Like, what bill? What's beans are the spill? Honestly, basically, Cruz tweeted back calling him, "You're a coward. Don't you dare bring my wife into this." And then Trump doubles down, and he tweets out a picture of, it was not a flattering picture of Mrs. Cruz. Alongside I'm assuming a photo shoot headshot of his third wife, Melania, and it said, you know, basically a picture's worth a thousand words. It was a commentary on, you know, look at how look how bad Heidi Cruz looks. Look how beautiful
my wife
is.
Yeah,
and it's like, how would you want this? You know. No need to spill the beans when just a picture's worth a thousand words. And, you know, never in my lifetime would I have thought we'd have not just the presidential candidate, but the front runner engage in something like this.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And what's worse is how many people are liking his tweet and tweeting it out and defending the man. Because, well, it's like, well, Cruz started it. No, he didn't. No, he didn't.
Yeah.
Liz Marr said, who did the ad, this was not his idea. If you want to blame somebody, blame me. Yeah. I want the attention, you know. Yes, media attention, you know, and this in consultant land, there's no such thing as bad media. You know, it's like, all right, we're getting people's attention.
Yep.
So this is just, created an interesting dynamic, and never would I thought we would have this kind of exchange. But Cruz was asked about, he was campaigning in Wisconsin. And he was asked about this tweet, and I got a clip here. We'll listen for a little bit here. Clip talks
about
Cruz.
It's not easy to tick me off. I don't get angry often. But you mess with my wife, you mess with my kids, that'll do it every time. Donald, you're a sniveling coward, and leave Heidi the hell alone.
So will you support him as the nominee?
I'm going to beat him.
You have to see the look on his face when he said that.
I am answering the question. Donald Trump will not be the nominee. When he gets scared, he screams, he yells, often he curses, and he insults and attacks whoever is standing near him. And you're right, Donald does seem to have an issue with women. Donald doesn't like strong women. Strong women scare Donald. Now, Donald is scared a lot these days. Donald is scared to debate. He ran away from the last debate that was scheduled because he was scared of Megyn Kelly and because he was scared to defend his policies. Listen, Donald doesn't know much about foreign policy. The day before the Brussels terror attack, Donald called for America effectively withdrawing from NATO. That is utter foolishness. It would hand a massive victory to Putin and to ISIS. That weakness and unilateral surrender is indicative of someone that doesn't have a basic understanding of foreign policy. That's why Donald is afraid of debates.
All right, we could because of debate. Stop there. You know, I good for Cruz. I'm not sure I would have been as restrained as he was. That his initial response on Twitter to Donald, he quoted Donald's tweet, and he said, you know, basically, Donald, your wife is lovely, and Heidi's the love of my life. Let's leave wives out of this. Kind of, I can't remember exactly, but that was essentially what he said. Very classy.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it just amazes me how people are just, well, you know, Cruz, well, you know, I hear first of all, well, Cruz didn't disavow. Yes, he has twice. He said it was inappropriate, that ad, Facebook ad was inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sean Hannity, who is a Trump fanboy, said that he admitted that Cruz condemned the ad. Okay. Now, I was getting in a Twitter back and forth with Eric Branstad, who's the son of our governor, who's basically the mouthpiece for big corn and ethanol in the state of Iowa. And he's saying, well, you know, this group's tied to Cruz. He's got Cruz ties. And it's like, okay, even if that were the case, does that make what Donald did right?
Right.
Indeed. No, absolutely not. And if Cruz was involved, and he wasn't, because basically, if you understand it, that one thing it shows me that Trump doesn't understand election law. Cruz can't be involved in super PAC decisions. That would be breaking the law.
Right.
They can't. They're not supposed to communicate. They're not supposed to collaborate. So the candidates are not in the know on decisions like these. But this particular super PAC is an anti-Trump super PAC. So they would have put out an ad on behalf of any candidate they thought was going to be able to beat Donald Trump in Utah. So it's not that they have this great love for Ted Cruz. So anyway, I just find this amazing. Cruz, he's been asked, why didn't he attack Trump early on? And I thought he had something good to say here, too. Clip four.
You know, today is actually the one-year anniversary of when we launched our campaign. We launched it on March 23rd, a year ago. And if you look at, we started, there were 17 candidates in this race. It was a wonderfully diverse, talented, dynamic, young field. And it really incredible talent. If you look at a number of the candidates that took on Donald Trump early on, they ended up as roadkill.
Right.
Our objective was simple from the beginning. It is to win this race, to win the nomination, and then beat Hillary Clinton and turn this country around.
And not be roadkill.
And not be roadkill. I am very strongly committed on the anti-roadkill approach.
Okay.
And so our approach was quite simple. We needed to build our base first. We needed to get my positive message out, my record out, and build and assemble our team. We've now got over 260,000.
So basically, that was with Charlie Sykes of WTMJ. Not entirely sure where they're located, but and this is, you know, Rick Perry tried to attack Donald Trump, and it went nowhere. He fell flat. Bobby Jindal. We've had Bobby Jindal on the radio on our program talking about Trump, and it didn't stick. And that's because neither of those candidates had the base and the resources to really go after him effectively.
Mm-hmm.
You could say, you know, kudos to them for going early on. And, you know, Cruz probably said some things that I wouldn't have necessarily gone buddy buddy with Trump. But I certainly can understand why he held off until he was in a position to actually go after him. Yeah. Anyway, you're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Van Hert, and wanted to play another clip too. It's not very often when a state legislator goes after a political group on the floor of the Iowa House, but Matt Winchell did. Let's play his floor remarks.
Is there discussion? Chair recognized gentleman from Harrison, Representative Winchell. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good afternoon, Mr. Speaker. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen of the House. First and foremost, I'd like to thank Representative Baxter for his hard work on this legislation. This has been a long time coming. What we have before us now is a bill that's going to expand Iowa's freedoms. Yes, the Senate chose to make some corrections, and I'm appreciative of their efforts as well. I'm appreciative of this body and the latitude that it has shown us to be able to have a civil discourse on the different debates that we've had in regards to Second Amendment rights. That being said, there's also some other people that deserve some thanks, and we need to set the record straight and make sure that credit is given where credit is due. The hardworking folks at the Iowa Firearms Coalition have been working with me and other legislators for years to try and advance this bill, as well as many other topics, as we have seen through the efforts of the Iowa House over the past 5 and now 6 years. We would not be where we're at here today with this bill before us, legalizing suppressors in the state of Iowa, without those hardworking folks at the Iowa Firearms Coalition. We also have been working with the National Rifle Association. They have lent their ability to look at the legalese across the states and give us language that helps us craft the best possible legislation when it comes to Second Amendment rights. So I'm very appreciative of those organizations and the folks across Iowa that are members of those organizations. But in the same vein of giving credit where credit is due, the folks of Iowa that are watching this video, you need to hear something here today. You need to know that there's an organization out there that has continued to denigrate those folks that are fighting to advance your Second Amendment rights. They look at the legislation legalizing suppressors and they call it a watered-down gun bill. Is this the best thing we can do? No. But is it where we're at right now today? Absolutely. Are we fighting on every front to try and advance every possible piece of legislation to enhance and protect your Second Amendment rights? Absolutely. So when you get those emails that tell you the sky is falling, send somebody money because they're the only ones that can fix the problem, please take it with a grain of salt. Look for this nugget of truth that is out there. Folks, don't be fooled by those scam artists. Don't be fooled by those charlatans. Iowa Firearms Coalition and the National Rifle Association are the ones that have helped us get where we're at here today, and we're continuing the fight onward.
Thank you,
Mr. Speaker.
Yeah, he's talking about the Iowa gun owners. He didn't name them by name, but he has in the past. And the House passed the Senate tweak, the amendment that they added to the suppressor bill. So that is now been passed and waiting for Governor Brandt to sign, which once he signs, we'll all be able to go out and buy suppressors for our guns. Isn't that exciting? Yes, it is. Anyway, hang tight. We'll be back in a moment. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio with Shane Vanderhart.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org. On the line, we're doing something a little bit different for our third segment. We got Megan Toombs, who is the Communications and Outreach Director with the Cornwall Alliance of the for the Stewardship of Creation. And some of our regular listeners would be familiar with that organization, as we've had Cal Beisner on a number of times, as well as James Wanless. We record on Fridays, even though this airs on Saturday, but on March 25th, we're marking a very special day. Norman Borlaug would have been 102 today if he were still alive. And Megan, why is it important to remember Norman Borlaug?
Well, he is actually known as the man who saved a billion people, or the father of the Green Revolution. He was an expert in plant pathology and genetics. And he increased crop yields across the world by 700%. He received a Nobel Peace Prize in 1970 for his work in India and Pakistan, and had hoped to take his work into Africa, but was actually stopped by environmentalists who said that what he was doing wasn't good for the earth, when in fact, by increasing crop yields, he preserved an enormous amount of land from being used for crops, creating nature preserves and other uses for that land.
Right. So environmentalists back then were just kind of not rational and logical like they are now, it seems
right.
like. So, yeah, carbon's bad. Wait a minute. Carbon's plant food. You know, that's how's that a bad thing?
There you go.
So what are some things that people could do to help, you know, remind people about the accomplishments? By the way, if our listeners aren't aware, Norman Borlaug was a native Iowan. He was born in Iowa. He got his degrees up in from University of Minnesota, which is unfortunate. Too bad he didn't go to Iowa State or something. But anyway, a great Iowan. And so anyway, what should we do to honor his memory? Any ideas?
Well, we have a lot of articles on our website, cornwallalliance.org, about him, and you can just share what you know about him, learn a little bit more about him. He was an amazing man. I mean, at the same time that Paul Ehrlich was writing the population bomb and claiming that there was absolutely no way to feed the world's growing population, we needed to enforce abortions and sterilizations on the developing world, not the West, the developing world.
Right.
Norman Borlaug, at that exact same time, stepped up and said, no, there's something we can do about it. So, I mean, if you see an issue in the world, step up and do something about it.
Absolutely.
We have brains, we have the capability God gave us, and we should, use that.
Absolutely. Well, hey, thank you so much for coming on, Megan, and I'm glad you guys shot me that email this morning so I could have you on. It's important to remember heroes like Norman Borlaug, because they truly did make a huge difference through their ingenuity and through the gifts that God gave them. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on, I wanted to highlight some audio of Newt Gingrich speaking. This was on CNN, I believe. He was discussing the Belgium attacks. I wanted to make sure we highlighted that.
Well, I think we have to learn some lessons from Belgium. Part of it is you've got to screen people and you've got to know who people are. This is a major factor with the Syrian refugee argument, for example. Where we're a little bit different from the Europeans is that we assimilate people reasonably well. So there aren't very many neighborhoods in the U.S. that resemble Molenbeek. But the Belgians and the French and the British have a huge problem. The Germans are developing a huge problem because they have entire neighborhoods that the police don't go into that are increasingly dominated by Islamic supremacists. So that you had, for example, this guy was out from November on in the neighborhood. People knew he was there and nobody would turn him in. And I think they have a very deep problem. In this country, we need to continue to appeal to the Muslim American community to be alert for potential radicalism and to help the authorities find people who are.
Yes, to find people who are radicalized. And Belgium has got a serious problem. Europe has a serious problem.
Yeah.
I mean, two things that they go against them. One, open borders. They totally have, these open borders that it's so easy to go in and out of, especially different countries in that make up the European Union, of which Belgium hosts the capital, the Brussels, the capital of the European Union. So it was not a matter of if there was going to be a terrorist attack in a city like Brussels. but when. They were literally kind of setting themselves up for it. And it's unfortunate. And they, you know, I think they're still in danger. We saw this as well with the Paris shootings that took place. I mean, and Gingrich is right. These folks are not assimilating into the community like you see in the United States, even though we don't necessarily have the melting pot like, you know, that was originally intended.
Yeah.
But we don't necessarily have the issues like what you see in Europe. And a lot of that is definitely a political correctness at work.
Sure.
So, you know, what to do? For one thing, we need to be careful about what refugees we let in, for one thing. We need to be able to screen people. We need to know who these people are before we just, you know, allow them in. Cruz took some criticism when he talked about patrolling Muslim neighborhoods to, you know, to try to prevent radicalization and people envision, I guess I can't entirely blame them, a police state. And really, this kind of going back to what Gingrich was saying, this is more of a working with the Muslim American community. This is, think community policing.
Right.
It's developing relationships. It's building rapport. It's having, what he's talking about and what community policing does is having particular officers in a neighborhood where they get to know the residents and they're assigned there and that's their beat and their territory, so they know what's going on. Possibly recruiting police officers from within those communities. Training, you know, having Arabic speaking or Farsi speaking or Pashto speaking officers as well, depending on the neighborhood.
Sure.
And, you know, somebody asked, how do you determine those neighborhoods? I'm not entirely sure. Those are details that would need to be fleshed out. But it's not talking about setting up a surveillance state. It's not talking about monitoring mosques. It's not wanting... I would hate to see anybody's civil rights be violated. So not... But we need to drop the PC Act because you can keep targeting those radicalized Presbyterians, but, you know, they're not blowing up stuff. So,
yep.
But radicalized Muslims are. That's just the fact. That's just the fact. So one story I want to highlight really quick before this segment ends. Davenport man protests law that makes him pay for another man's child. Have you heard about this, Ron?
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
It is crazy. This is from WQAD Channel 8. A Quad City man is protesting a child support law that requires him to pay for another man's child. Joe Van Dusen thought it was a joke when he received a certified letter from the Iowa Department of Human Resources last month at his home in Davenport. I opened it up. It was for child support for a kid that was not even mine. And the reason was... basically, Iowa law says Joe is still legally responsible, and the state and his child support recovery union are telling him that he better pay up. He's not had contact with his wife in 16 or 17 years. This child just turned one. There's no way it's his.
Yeah.
They just never got divorced. This is...
And so according to law, according he's to still law, responsible, he, even though he hasn't been there.
He's on the hook. So, yeah. This is just unbelievable. Legislature needs to deal with this. I think they need to find a way to deal with this before they get out of session. They'll probably have to find a bill they can amend to add this to the code because we're past the funnel weeks. But, man, it would be a travesty if this law is not addressed this year because this man needs some recourse. It's totally unjust. One quickly, by the way, there's a Colorado school district that's passing out atheist and satanic literature because, hey, they got to pass out to everybody. Anyway, maybe we'll touch on that a little bit more next segment. This is Caffeinate Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Your well-meaning post just blew up. That friendly debate quickly escalated into ugly insults. You figure it's time to delete it and take a sabbatical from social media. I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. It seems that the internet has made it all too easy for people to vent their problems, proclaim their opinions, and draw others into their drama. But don't be so quick to blame the advances on social media. It is something else that's prompting people to pull the trigger on the send or submit button. Basically, this is not an internet problem, but an internal problem. Jesus warned, for out of the heart come evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false witness, slander. Before unplugging from technology, take time to visit our website at crosswalkcounseling.org or call Crosswalk Ministries at 515-635-5465.
Welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Hey, you know what? We're not just on the radio. We vlog, too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. We'd appreciate it. Going back to the story that I brought up last segment, I just wanted to give a little more attention. This is in Delta, Colorado. Delta County, Colorado. They're passing out atheist and satanic literature. This should be on the "You Can't Make This Stuff Up" segment.
Yeah, but we're not it would almost fit.
It would fit. This is being passed out by the Western Colorado Atheists and Freethinkers. They're saying they're working with the Freedom From Religion Foundation to offer Delta students alternative ways of thinking. So satanic, that's an alternative way of thinking, I guess. And the Delta County School District says that their policy reads that they cannot discriminate against any groups or organizations when it comes to non-curricular materials. The only exceptions are if the material promotes hostility or violence. Satanic. Commercial purposes by advertising a product interfere. You can't advertise a product, but you can satanic.
Yes.
Material interferes with the schools. That satanic material could end up doing that. Promotes candidacy in election. Oh, that's far worse than promoting satanic literature. Or is obscene, satanic,
yes,
pornographic. You know, the atheists, okay, I kind of see the argument a little bit, but, you know, even prisons don't really allow satanic literature. Yep. Come on, can we use some common sense?
It's clear evidence of the worldview that crafted that.
Absolutely. Yeah, not all things are created equal here. I just wanted also, you know, this weekend is Easter weekend, and I wanted to highlight a post written by Tony Rinke at Desiring God. I probably totally botched his last name. He's talking about Good Friday. Today we stop and celebrate the one man who shared our flesh and blood, but did not share our tyranny under the reign of death. And since he had no fear of death, he was not distracted by vain amusements, and he was not driven by self-preservation. Death was his sworn enemy, not his inevitability. There was stress, to be sure, bright red tears pressed out by the weight of his task, but death could not deter him. Death could not manipulate him. He would not shuffle backwards. He would square up on death for us. Good Friday is a strange and wonderful day as we celebrate the one thing our culture tries so desperately to suppress, and yet is our prime opportunity to see his love on display in the agony of the cross, and by it to see that Satan's great power play over humanity has been broken. Today, or yesterday as you hear this, we celebrate death not as a morbid preoccupation, but as proof that we've been freed from the fear of death, freed from the enslaving power of the world. Amen.
Amen.
Amen to that. I hope that if you don't understand that you can be free from the fear of death, that you would consider Jesus. Jesus Christ came to earth as fully God, fully man, lived a perfect life, and he died upon a cross for your sin and mine so that we would not have to bear the punishment of our sin on our own. But Jesus paid it for us. And all we have to do, and not only that, in Easter, you're wondering what Easter is about. He rose from the grave. Death could not hold him. And because of that, he can declare victory over death and sin. And anybody that has a relationship with him, if you ask Jesus to be your Lord and Savior, ask him to come in your life, turn from your sin and turn to him, you can be a brand new person in Jesus Christ. If you need to know more about that, drop me a line. Email me at shane@caffeinatedthoughts.com, and I'd be happy to discuss that with you more. But I would encourage you, if you've never done so, this Easter Sunday, this Easter weekend, place your faith in Christ. You can become that new person, experience new life in Christ.
and you never be afraid of death again. This is Shane Van Harp, Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.